Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is principal of a very interesting school for immigrant children. It is International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C., and she has worked as an educator, as a teacher in Prince George County for many years, often teaching English for speakers of other languages. She also served in the Peace Corps in Ethiopia. Immigrants make up one-third of the system's 128,000 students, and there are new students arriving all the time. Recently, a number of them who crossed by themselves into the U.S. from Mexico, they're adjusting to a new country, they're adjusting to family members maybe they've never met before, and also to being a student. Because of a grant from the Carnegie Foundation, $3 million, the two high schools were open for recent immigrants last fall, and she is one of the principals. There's a whole different philosophy of educating. Students who were immigrants faced very, very high dropout rates because obviously language is a problem. You don't speak the language, and maybe you haven't been in school a long time. So here you are, maybe at a second grade speaking level or reading level in English, and you're thrust into a high school algebra class, and you know, it's hard. It's difficult. So the students, although they've just started, appear to be doing very well, and it's really an interesting philosophy of education. Allison Hank Sloan is our guest this hour, principal of International High School at Largo in D.C., and we're welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Allison, thank you ever so much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you for this opportunity. Yeah. And buenas tardes and salam and greetings.
Yeah, very, very, very nice to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about the students you are educating. I mean, these stories are striking. To be a young person who's coming from Mexico unaccompanied into the United States, people coming from all over the world, it must be so intimidating, at least initially, for these young people.
We look at it as we have students with amazing skills because they've figured out how to get themselves here. And a lot of them have come to reconnect with mom or dad who they haven't seen in over 10 years.
Oh, my gosh. Haven't seen in over 10 years. And some of them have made the trek by themselves, right?
They have. They can all write some Pulitzer Prize-winning stories or an Oscar-winning movie someday.
Yeah, and I hope they do. Because they should,
too.
they should do that. So tell me, is the school just for the immigrant students, or do you have other students in the classrooms?
The only requirement to get into our school is we're a school of choice in our school system is that English is not your first language. Mm-hmm. And so some of our students have been American-born, and some of them have come from multiple countries. Almost every continent has been touched.
So do you teach in multi-languages here, or do you teach in English?
We teach in English, but we value the native language. So we strongly encourage students to use their native language to help themselves understand and navigate the material.
And you, I know, had taught before, and you were dismayed by the number of immigrant students who weren't graduating from school. Did that motivate you to do the line of work that you're doing now, and why didn't those students graduate?
Absolutely. It was somewhere deep in the root of my soul, I think, of realizing that students were not making it from 9th grade to 12th grade. And as I started to get further into teaching and also into researching supports that are happening for English language learners, as we refer to them, ELLs, I realized that it was a nationwide problem, it was a statewide problem, it was a district problem. And students were leaving for a multitude of reasons. They were leaving sometimes because they needed to put more energy into making money for their family or paying off some of their debts that they may have incurred in coming to the United States. Mm-hmm. For others, it might have been that they were needed at home to do other things, and they saw more of themselves as a value outside of school than in school. There were the challenges of the language, some of the students not having been highly educated based on their prior experience from wherever they came from. Around the world, girls' education is not always a priority, and so oftentimes we can find our students having gaps in their education or not having necessarily developed the reading expected when they get into a high school level. And so a variety of frustrations played a role in many of the students. Two out of three students nationwide, and again in many of our states, are only graduating from high school who are English language learners. So it's how do we do some things differently?
Right. And you have a whole different philosophy. It's from reading about how you're teaching students. It's very different that there aren't any letter grades. They're focusing on skills they'll use after high school. They are scored, and I wonder how you came up with these, on social-emotional learning, language, critical thinking, and then content knowledge.
Yes, we are part of what's called the Carnegie Spring Point Initiative. And the Carnegie Foundation has been looking at how do we do schools differently and how do we look at things from a mastery-based approach. So how are we looking at the skills that are necessary to help our students be successful when they graduate from high school? And so rather than your traditional, you're getting an A because you turned in an assignment or you get this many points, it's really do you understand the skills that you need to move forward in our from like we're calling it like our lower school, our 9th and 10th grade looping and classes that are looped together into 11 and 12, which we're not there yet. But we look at socio-emotional, we look at self-awareness, social awareness, self-management, responsible decisions, collaboration, work ethic and persistence, which are things we know a student needs to have to be successful in life. We also look at the content area, so if it's math, if it's science, there's certain things you need to develop in those specific content areas. We look at critical thinking. Are they gathering and organizing information? Are they proposing ideas? Are they using technology? Are they planning, modeling? And then what makes us unique being a school for English language learners is every teacher is responsible for making sure that they're incorporating reading, writing, speaking, and listening in English so that our students are taking are building the necessary language skills while also learning that subject.
Mm. How difficult and how long does it take if you're coming into school speaking, say, Spanish, and you haven't spoken much English and your family maybe doesn't speak English? How long does it take to be able to learn science in English or to be able to learn math in English or English in English?
It's all going to depend on what your prior education was. And so a student who comes having been in school and being highly educated, it's going to be a quicker ability to switch over and learn it in a different language because they have that foundation. For our students who've been in or out of school or may or may not read in their first language, mm-hmm. it's going to take a longer time, and research actually shows it can take up to 5 to 7 years based on the gaps a student has in their education.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that you have students of all ages coming to the school, right?
We have interest of students of all ages. In our school system, yes, there's students of all ages coming because our state, students can enter up to age 21 and be in school.
Oh.
Our own school, we put sort of an age cap on it just because we needed to start somewhere. And so our students had to be under 16 or under when they entered our school. But we do have 9th graders who are 14, 15, and 16 years old.
So I understand that you're sharing some space with, I don't know, is it fair to call it a more traditional high school?
Yes, we are sharing the building of a comprehensive high school. We, like many places across the nation, there's always a shift in demographics sometimes, and neighborhood shift. And we happen to be in an area where there's a large high school next to a community college, and the enrollment in the high school has declined from over 2,000 to less than 1,000. And resource-wise, it made a lot of sense to share together the building. So we're sharing the library, we share a nurse, we share security, we share cafeteria, and we share some of the space. And we're also sharing lessons and teachers, too.
Hmm. I know there was a little bit of dissension when the school was started. There was some opposition. Tell me about it, from the NAACP publicly opposing the schools because they said it violated Brown v. the Board of Education.
There were some unknowns about who we were and what it would look like, and some concerns about what it would be to have two schools in one building. That was something new in our district that wasn't traditionally done. It's been a really great partnership since we've come together, and it's been a lot of teaming together. I think once we realize that we're all in this together and it's all about kids, it's been a real positive relationship.
Mm-hmm. And you are 3 years. How many students do you have now? And I think I read that you're adding a grade every year, so you're at 9th grade now?
Right, we're only 100, and there's two schools in our school district that are doing our international high school. So we each have 100 students, and then we'll roll in another 100 this next year and go up to about 400.
So there, obviously, you're in a pretty big population center in the country. There must be a number of other immigrant students who are going to more traditional high schools.
There are. We are over 3,000 high school students who are English language learners in
wow.
our school district, and that number continues to grow. So we're pilot schools and looking at how to do things differently that hopefully we'll be able to provide some tools and techniques that we can model throughout the district.
And is there support? I'm wondering where the support comes from. We, as you know, we're in these polarized political times now, and there's kind of an anti-immigrant fervor in some parts of the country right now. Do you have to deal with that in some way, or do you find that there are a number of people who are embracing your philosophy and willing to give you funds to make this endeavor possible?
A combination of both. Again, I think sometimes when you're the unknown, there's questions about who we are. But when they see what we're doing and the reality is that we're servicing students that are in our school district and we're all about how do we support every single student in the district, there's a lot of positive responses. It's also when people come into our school and they start to talk to kids and they talk to teachers and see what we're really doing. It's been a really phenomenal response. And so even something so small, like I don't mean to give a shout out for, we have a National League baseball team that is providing us with some extra equipment as we had 17 baseball players, 14 had never played baseball before. And one of the, our coaches started calling around to teams in the area. And Baltimore Orioles responded and are helping us out by getting us some new equipment, as many of our students never even had gloves. And
aww.
So it's really nice to see small things such as that, which is actually very significant in all the lives of those students, of people being willing to help and interested in knowing more of who we are and what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And now those students are going to have their own team, right? They'll have a team.
I know.
It's Baltimore.
They're actually going to the game, too.
Yes, that's good. I like that. Baseball does more than just beat baseball sometimes, doesn't it?
It does. Hey, it's a true American sport, so it's a great opportunity for our kids.
Yeah. So you have, tell me more about the makeup of the school. You have students, I've read, from Burma, Senegal, Liberia, Haiti, Central American countries, all over.
We do. It's pretty amazing. We're our own little United Nations here. And every, again, as I said earlier, every student has a story. I mean, some students have had some tragic events in their life that have led them to here. Other students have been very positive events and opportunities that just brought them closer to family to be here. And the kids work together. One of the things that's unique if you walk through our school is you see collaborative tables and you see students of different languages all working together and different levels working together. And part of that's that international principal model where it's the idea that you keep students together at multiple levels because everybody's helping and supporting each other and everybody has something to contribute.
Tell me about your time in the Peace Corps. That obviously was a formative time in your life because it led in some ways to what you're doing now.
It was great. It was, I can confess, I actually thought I was going to go to Latin America. I've studied Spanish all my life, and I thought I'd end up somewhere Spanish-speaking and then take my Spanish to a perfect place, and ended up going to Ethiopia and starting that group. We were the re-entry group. There had been hundreds of people in Ethiopia in the Peace Corps prior, and they left out in the 70s, and I went back in the mid-90s as the first group to go back in there, and I taught English in a place called Debrecena, which is Mount Sinai in English, and it was located at about 10,000 feet overlooking the Rift Valley.
Mm.
Absolutely beautiful, up in the mountains, and it changed my life. I walked into that classroom, and I realized the power of education. It's something I'd been in denial of because my mother was a teacher, and I was never going to do what my mom did. I was going to be a journalist. I was going to be the next Margaret Mead with journalism attached to
aww.
It. And the classroom where I could see that girls were sitting in the back and boys were in the front, and I went in there and I started to shake up the seating arrangement, and I had them talking in a school system where they were used to writing notes off the board only. I suddenly realized how you can empower kids by just the lessons we as teachers provide, and I stayed in education since then. It's been 20 plus years.
Oh my goodness! And I'll bet you get a chance to speak Spanish now too, don't you?
I do. My Spanish is much better, and my Amharic's pretty good, too.
Good for you. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our guest this hour is Allison Hanks Sloan, and she is the principal of International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C. The school is designed for immigrant children. You've heard her describe the makeup of the school. The students are coming from all over the world, some have come from very difficult life circumstances. Some have walked all the way from Mexico to Maryland in order to meet up with a mother they haven't seen in 10 years or parents they haven't seen in 10 years. And so they're educating people from Africa and from Asia and from South America and Central America. And these are students who don't speak English as a first language and so and have all these immigrant experiences. And they're finding that they are studying their culture. They're also studying the ways their countries are different through art, literature, science, and music. They have an interesting interdisciplinary approach once a month, and it has given their team a mascot, and we'll talk about that in just one moment. But here's an example of one of the students, Carlos, who at the age of 13 made his way alone from Honduras to the Mexican border. He was detained by immigration officials, eventually sent to live with his mother in Prince George's County and had not seen her in years, and he is now a student at the school. Students are given content at whatever grade level they're able to understand. If they can't grasp ideas in English, they can learn some of the concepts in their native language. School just opened in the fall, one grade now, but it will expand. And what do you think of it? Is this a good way to educate people who don't speak English as a first language, new immigrants to this country? Does it make sense so that they will graduate from high school, so they won't drop out? Or do you think a truly integrated education is a better way to go? We'd like to hear from you. Here's how you call us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. I'm sure many of you in education are dealing with immigrant students as well. What do you think is the most effective way for them to be taught? Are you integrating them into your classroom? What are the disadvantages of being put into a school where you are integrated? Does it make sense to have a school like this where you can learn your native culture is respected and your language is respected and you're not competing against people who are really, really fluent in English, and all your classes then would be in English as well? Well, what do you think? We welcome your calls. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Lines are open for you right now. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, immigrant children and a very interesting school that is educating these students in a very different way. Our guest is Allison Hank Sloan, principal of International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C., a school that is designed for immigrant children. She has worked as an educator in Prince George County for a number of years, teaching English for speakers of other languages, and she also served in the Peace Corps in Ethiopia. What is the best way to teach immigrant children? What is your experience? I'm sure many of you who are listening are educators. We have a lot of educators who listen to this program. How do you teach students who come to this country and don't speak English fluently? Is it difficult for them? What is the best model to use? We certainly welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. When it says, you, I believe, have said this in an article written about the school, Allison, that the goal at your school is to be judged against yourself. What does that mean?
That means that it's all about where you come in with your own skill set and about you as a student improving that skill set. So it's not about the traditional A, B, C, D grade piece, but it's about, are you learning how to develop a thesis sentence? Do you understand how to design a graph and build a graph, and that your own point system, if you will, is developing and getting higher so that you're ideally mastering all the different skills that you need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And there's also, which this sounds like great fun, competence-based education. They're studying art, literature, science, and music every Tuesday for 1 month. They're studying sea turtles. That's cool, huh? Sea turtles.
We're the sea turtle mascot. There are sea turtles living in all the oceans of the world, and all those oceans touch the countries that our students have come from, or continents, I should say. And so we actually did a whole first month study on sea turtles, and we looked at it from a social studies perspective and laws about them. We looked at it environmentally with science. We did some studies with math connected. We did poetry with English, and it was very interdisciplinary and competency centered. So we could look at how do we start mastering our skills and doing that together.
That's great. Let's go to some phone calls for you. We start with Michael in Milwaukee. Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yes, my wife came here from Hungary in 1956, and her take on it was that plain immersion right into the system is about the best, because then you are actually forced to learn it. You don't have any of these crutches. As my dad would say, it's red hog or die, and now you got some motivation of actually to learn the language. Growing up in Milwaukee, there's probably 40 different types of languages that are spoken here. And I learned Spanish as Madrid, but when we worked at the canning company, they spoke Mexican Spanish. So whatever we learned in school wasn't a bit of good. So it's an interesting concept that the lady's talking about, but there's so many versions. There's over 200 different distinct dialects of Spanish. Last I checked, there was 20 different ones of German. Even in this country, you get in Appalachia, they talk about Vittles, and everybody looks on them as some poor hillbilly, and it isn't. That's actually Scottish.
Mm-hmm.
For food.
Allison.
Yes.
So is the best plan to just put everybody into a school and say, learn it, and that's going to be the fastest way to learn it, and you're on your own?
I think that goes back to that 2 out of 3 nationwide are successful in school and 1 out of 3 is dropping out. So how do we do it differently? It just goes back to everybody learns a little differently. Some students do it really quickly and are fine in a large comprehensive high school, and some need a little extra support and a chance to sort of explore in their own different ways and some other opportunities to learn it. So I'm glad she was successful. She's probably what we call linguistically gifted, which is a great skill, and not everyone always has that skill.
Thank you so much, Michael, for your call. Let's go next to Pat in East Troy. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Yes, I think that the schools now are too large. We need to go back to the community schools so the children really feel like they're part of something and that the students can work more together. Sometimes when I go to the schools, it's like you're seeing a big herd of cattle. And the kids, especially in the middle, kind of get left behind, which ends up costing society. And also with immigrant students that don't know English, I think what they need to do is when the students first immigrate, instead of putting them in a school system, they should have English classes for them so that they become very fluent, maybe the first 6 months. And that way they could do better in the school system.
Thank you, Pat, very much for the call. Is your school small? Are there smaller class sizes? Allison?
They are. We have no class larger than 25.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we do even smaller classes. We break out into advisory or extra support groups. And it does make a difference. It gives a chance for all students to really basically have to show what they know or not know and get the support in it, so nobody sort of falls between the cracks.
Mm-hmm. So if I were Carlos and I was having my first day or my first month at your school and I walked into my, science class, what would happen there? And let's say that I just didn't speak a word of English.
You'd be sitting with a group of students and you'd be assigned a role where you're going to be doing something in that lesson. So even if it's something about cells and you know very little English, there's going to be a diagram there and you might be the one responsible for helping build the diagram with the team or taking on something that might not involve the writing piece. But you're going to have a part of that lesson that you're responsible for contributing and making it happen. It's what we call experiential learning. We have a lot of project-based activities and space in the classroom where everyone's working together.
Let's go next to Maijong in Madison. Hello, Maijong.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm driving, so if it's too loud, let me know. I just want to call and say thanks for having the topic. I am a Hmong refugees that arrived to Wisconsin in the 80s as a teenager, mm-hmm. and I think learning can be both significant in putting it in a classroom, so you immerse yourself with non-familiar faces, as well as having support system like the program that you're talking about, where you can also then fall back and be able to filter what some of the new things that you're learning is, so you're not on your own. So, for example, when we came in the 80s, there is no support for us at all. So we go right into the regular class where we dive in to learn ABC and speak, you know, the language. And it's very frustrating when we don't understand what's happening and we can't process that. It's very crucial to have, you know, something that they can fall back on, where at the end of the day they can come in and talk and share their experience, but also have the opportunity to immerse themselves and be integrated with the other students, so they can also then learn, because you only learn when you are at a learning stage. And many times I think people don't give credit to the new students, but we do have other language capacities, so many times learning a new language is not as difficult as people think.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to, yeah, share that. I think we need both the integration of new students into the system as well as the support system for them to process.
Yeah. Majong, how long did it take for you to feel totally comfortable in the American classroom? You felt like your language is up to par, you could understand everything that was happening, and that you felt, this is my home now?
I've been here about 35 years, so I'm still, I think when you're learning up in college, I'm still learning my punctuations and my grammars.
Right.
But I know enough to study, and I know enough to ask questions and so forth. And I think the other part that I'm very grateful for are mentors.
Sure.
Students who take us as, you know, their mentees and show us around and, you know, build that relationship with us. Because I remember the first week we were in gym, and my cousin and I stormed out of gym and never went back because we did not know anything about taking showers.
Oh, and no. Right.
When we got out of volleyball and we went to the locker room, and all these very well-developed teenage Caucasian girls, you know, with body parts that we don't want to see are coming, you know, towards us, you know, without clothes. We were really shocked. And
yeah.
So we disappeared from school for a whole month until they could figure out what's going on.
Oh, my, yeah.
So that's the support system that we need, is really to be able to process the new culture that's happening in our world.
Right, and they had to process your culture. Where do these girls go? That's quite a story, Allison.
It is, and it's very appropriate. I mean, we had some similar things with just even, you know, students who aren't comfortable wearing pants for the first time, and just culturally because it was something they didn't do, or as you said, being tuned into these things. You disappeared for a month, so hopefully one of the things that makes our school unique of being small is that we would identify that and be able to have a conversation with them right on and go, whoops, okay, let's talk about this culturally and how we might do this a little differently together.
Yeah, exactly. Majong, thank you so much for calling. It was great to hear from you. Sinette in Lake Geneva, hi.
Hi. Times have changed, and we have to take that into account. My husband and I sent both of our children at grade school age to live first in Mexico and then in France and learn by total immersion, just going right into living with a family and going to school. Well, that worked just fine. But you can't do that now. Because to have total immersion succeed, you can't have any other speakers around who speak the same language as the non-English speaker, because they will gravitate to that person or group. You, for today, you couldn't just send non-English speakers into an ordinary school because there are too many for it to work. If you only had one non-speaker going into a grade school, they would succeed pretty well because kids would surround them and they learn pretty well as, when they're young, and they're more inclined to be helpers when they're young. But as they get older, kids are more exclusionary, not by being mean, but they've already formed their activities and their friendships. And so the non-English speakers get left out, and they don't have those chances to socialize during lunch and gym class or whatever. So today, they really need special instruction in learning English. And people who think, well, we don't like immigrants or whatever, we don't want to do them any favors. Well, what kind of world do you want to live in? Do you want to live in a United States where kids learn English and speak well and graduate from high school? Or do you want to learn in a place where they feel left out and they can't succeed as a normal, productive, happy citizen?
Allison.
I think you hit on a great point in that in language learning, there's what they call two different things. I try not to get too much jargon here, but it's what we would call playground talk and what we can call basic interpersonal, so that if we surround you, we throw you into China, you're going to learn Chinese within the first year or two. It's kind of like me in Ethiopia with the Peace Corps, that within the first 2 years, there's enough conversation I master that I could have basic conversations with people. But what's different, and you touched on it too, as you said it, the challenge is academically, there's a whole nother way that we learn our academic language. So you could throw me into Ethiopia with Peace Corps, but I can't tell you that I could take a 10th grade test now and be ready to do an actual test because I didn't learn the academic language, right? I didn't learn how to write it and read it in such depth that I'm able to perform successfully in school. And so you're right, with English, students who are completely immersed are going to pick it up, but they're not necessarily going to pick up what you need to be successful in school unless you're explicitly taught it. And that's the where we do it differently, because students learn a whole bunch of different ways. Just as we as adults, there's three different ways all of us might have learned a language.
I don't know if you know more beyond what I mentioned about Carlos. Sue on Facebook writes she would love to hear more about the young man who came from Honduras at the age of 13. Where has he been since he got to the Mexican border? What are the plans on incorporating these children with American children, and when? I wonder if all these children are learning about could benefit all of our children.
And absolutely. And I've got two students joining us. I don't know which ones are going to be coming in a few moments here to come and help so we can get some, whether it's, I don't know if it's Carlos or there'll be some other voices who have similar stories.
Okay.
They'll be ready to join us.
Good.
Definitely, as we work with the comprehensive high school and we work with them on our Tuesday afternoons and we do a variety of activities with their teachers and students, they're mentors and they do learn from each other. And that's been that powerful thing of just teenagers being in the same space and sharing together. One, our students are learning the English and some American norms, and then their students also sort of get a better understanding of who our students are and what we're all about. And the struggles that some have experienced, both American and our English language learners.
Mm-hmm. Sinette, thanks for your call. Christina in La Crosse, hi.
Hi there. Thank you for the topic. I'm kind of wondering about the broader applicability of some of the concepts that you're using at your school. I know that this sounds very similar to some of the research that I've heard about going on in education in recent years, letting students sort of work from the place where they're starting from and paying more attention to, bringing them to the next level instead of, everyone swallowing the same content and sort of also letting them choose their own direction in a lot of ways. But I'm wondering if some of these concepts start to be applied in the general school system, do you think that that will be helpful for, some of our English language learners in general who maybe don't have access to these, specialized schools. And having worked in both environments, do you think they could be helpful for the general population?
Hmm.
I think it's helpful. I mean, I see it as that idea that we all learn at different paces. And so part of that mastery-based learning is that idea that even, and as we think about our English language learners, some of our students are going to take 5 years to develop all their English and develop what they need and the supports that they need. I've got some students, including two who are just about to join me here, who I can see are going to be flying through. They've been writing more, they've been reading more, and as they progress into the next school year, they're going to get through like a 9th grade and 10th grade English faster than some of the other students, and they might be able to do things like dual enrollment at the community college and take some other classes. But so, yeah, mastery is about looking at the independence. So some, it's giving students that opportunity who might take 3 years to finish high school versus those who are going to take 5 years. And it's about being successful so that nobody's failing ninth grade, nobody's feeling like they don't get it. It's about how are you developing all of these skills and really having a sense of what that roadmap looks like so they know why they're doing it and how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think in the general population, I see there's actually some trends happening with the Carnegie Spring Point Grant. We're the school with the largest ELL population, International High School, Largo and International High School, Langley Park. But they have schools throughout the United States that they're working on doing competency-based learning at the high school level. And majority of their students are not necessarily ELLs. So they are looking at how does this help students in a variety of different ways.
Hmm. Well, I look forward to meeting a couple of your students in just a moment. Allison Hank Sloan is our guest. She is principal of International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C. It is a small school, public school that is designed for immigrant children. She worked as an educator in Prince George County for a number of years, teaching English for speakers of other languages, also served in the Peace Corps in Ethiopia. And these are small campuses for recent immigrants. And we're going to meet a couple of those immigrants as we carry on with Allison and take more phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And our guest, Allison Hank Sloan, is principal of International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C. Allison, do you have students with you there?
Yes, I have two students here. I have Kevin and Susie Mayell. And we're juggling a speakerphone and a regular phone, so we can hand them the phone here, the joy of doing this over state here.
Okay.
Who do you want to start with first?
you said it was Kevin?
Yes, I'll let Kevin talk and put him on the phone right
Thank
now.
Thank you. Thank you. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
Hi, Kevin. You're 14 years old?
Yes.
And you're from Mexico?
Yes.
How long have you been in the States?
I've been in the States for about 8 years.
Uh-huh. And tell me what prompted you to come here. Did you have family here?
Yeah, my aunt. I came here so we can have a better life.
I see. And how much English did you have when you came here?
Not a lot. But when I went to school, I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the advantages of being in the school that you're in now. What do you like about it?
I mean, I like how a lot of teachers care about you, but in some schools, they really don't. And, like, everyone here cares about your education.
Is it easier for you to be in a smaller school where the fact that you are at school with other immigrants is the focus of the school? What difference does it make for that to be the case?
I mean, it doesn't make a difference. All I know is that I get my work done.
Well, that's what school should be all about, right? You got to get your work done.
Yeah.
What do you want to do eventually?
I'm thinking about being a lawyer.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. And I would imagine you know other people from Latin America or from Mexico who are going to school in your area. Is there something that makes it easier for you as a student from Mexico to be studying in the school that you're in rather than being in a school where you're more mainstreamed and you're just being thrown right into the school with other immigrants, but no special attention is paid to you?
Well, there's like translators here that can help me if I have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me, like, more confident about my work because if I mess up, I can just tell one of them to help me.
Right. So when you first came here, did you go right to school somewhere?
Actually, my mom, she actually teach me English a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then I started school about, like, 2 months later.
I see. So you were at a different kind of school because the school you're at now is more a high school, right?
Yes.
How was the other school? Was it good?
I mean, it had ups and downs, but it was all right.
You sound like you're quite fluent in English now. How long did it take, Kevin?
To be honest, it took like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting better every day.
Yeah, it sounds great. And what about your family? Are they English speakers now as well?
My dad is, but my mom's still working on it. I'm trying to help her now since she taught me.
She taught you, and now you're teaching her.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you want to put Susie on? Thank you, Kevin. All the best to you, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Susie, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Susie. It's Kathleen. Hi. And you are 15, right?
Yeah.
And where are you from, Susie?
I'm from Haiti.
From Haiti. And how did you happen to come here?
I first came here to stay with my dad for a while and then went back to Haiti. I came back here in America and when I was 7 or 8 to live with my aunt in Connecticut.
Mm. And your English sound, you sound like a native speaker of English. I guess that wasn't always the case. You haven't always spoken English, have you?
No.
So how did you learn to speak so fluently?
When I was in Haiti, went out to school, there were English teachers who were teaching us how to speak English just in case we came to America, we know a little bit about the world.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about the school where you are now, Susie. It sounds like a really interesting school. The class size sounds good. The way that you're learning sounds, I don't know, kind of refreshing in a way, doesn't it? It's not memorization and all of that. It's really experience, work against yourself kind of learning.
The school is very amazing. It helps the students who just came to America with their learning, their writing, and the way that they speak to help them a lot. And if they don't understand something, there are like translators in the classroom that can help them translate the things that they don't understand.
I'll bet that you, hearing your English, are helping other students with their translation as well, aren't you?
If I understand something, I try to break it down for them so they can understand the work easier.
Mm-hmm.
Since I don't speak some of the languages, since we have laptops, I use the laptops and use Google Translate.
Oh, interesting. And how interesting it must be to go to school with your whole school. People are from all over the world, aren't they?
It's really amazing how I get to walk around school, meeting new people, seeing their culture, hearing their languages. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's like traveling all over the world, except you're doing it in your own school.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty nice thing. And what are you interested in doing, Susie?
When I grow up, I'd like to become a doctor.
Hmm. All right. More power to you. I bet you will be. Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. And put Allison back on, if you would, please. Allison?
Okay. Thank you.
Well, aren't they well-spoken? They're on their Yeah, they're on their way.
They're definitely our high-performing group here.
I can tell. They're great. All right, let's go back to phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655. Peter in Madison, thanks for waiting. Hi, Peter.
Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
This program, please don't misjudge me, it's not about the language. And the reason I'm saying that were a few opening statements, like mentioning that those children who have been coming here could write a book and get famous. I just recently toured Ivory Coast, and I can assure you that there's probably 10 million children waiting to come to the United States. I am an immigrant myself, so please don't accuse me of being insensitive about that. Now, language is just a secondary topic here. And the reason for me to say that is that every single time when Donald Trump has Election Day, which is yesterday, there's a program about immigration and how nice it is. Nobody ever mentions that the parents who send those young children, and Mrs. Dunn, a child 13 years old, is not a young man, it's a child, okay? And you know what? I will stop here because I might be accused of something. Maybe somebody will call and support me on my notion that what those children are doing is illegal. Second, is endangering them. If that daughter, would you send your own daughter via coyotes? I speak Spanish. Would you do that? Now, if something happens to that daughter, who is going to be responsible? Why are those parents not charged with child abuse? I'll finish and I'll call you some other day.
Okay, call me some other day. I'm sure immigration will be a topic. I mean, I don't think we're not. Who knows what the circumstances were of Carlos coming to the United States? He obviously was. You don't walk all that distance and put your life at risk unless you're coming here for some reason. There's poverty or there's violence or whatever in your hometown. You don't walk all that distance and be in a detention center. That just doesn't happen. But here we are in the midst of what is a political discussion as well about immigration to this country. And I'm wondering how your school and perhaps your students as well, Allison, can escape some of what you heard from this caller.
I think it takes, there's a lot of things going on. And we know that there's some challenges happening in some of the different countries where our students are coming from. We know some of them are dealing with a lot of transition, and there's some dangerous situations in which our students have faced. And so we know America's been a refuge for a lot of our families, and I hope continues to be a place where everybody feels a safe space. We work with an organization called CASA, which supports immigrant families and helps deal with some of the legal issues. It helps address some of the socio-emotional issues that are happening, the reunification that's going on, helping students who, whether documented or not documented, are helping them navigate their way and looking at how do we build opportunities for this generation when it comes to career and college opportunities. And so there's a lot of great teams coming together because it's like Hillary says, it takes a village.
Right. And we all have stories, too, of people who you do, I do, everybody listening. It's America, for heaven's sake. We all have stories of people who were very young who had to leave, and we don't know completely the circumstances of their leaving, who took great risks in order to come to the United States and maybe were the only members of their family who did so at the age of 15 or 16, escaping famine in my family's case or persecution or whatever the story was. But people came here at a chance to live, too. And so I think we tend to forget that. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I think we tend to forget some of that. We've always been a promise for so many people, and you can hear it in your students' voices. I'm going to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Here I am, and I'm going to have a big life now.
Absolutely, and that's what it's all about. It's about chances for families to come together. It's for families to reunite. It's for all of us to provide opportunities to be successful. I mean, we're a society of immigrants and have been for hundreds of years.
Yes.
And it's about how do we all provide opportunities and help one another.
Yeah. So what do you think about your model? Is it something that we're going to see all over the United States? I know there are a few now, but not many schools like yours.
I hope so. There are the International Network for Public Schools has schools in New York, and they have schools growing throughout the D.C. metro area, and there's some in California. They've been working with schools in different parts of the United States as well. And so what they bring is about heterogeneity and collaboration and experiential learning and language and content. And we see students graduating at higher levels from there. We see students being successful. And then where we're a little different is we add that piece on about really being about the mastery focus. So it's something I hope we can, we're navigating new waters together, but I see success. I see students growing. I see them starting to understand their own learning and owning it so that they know what they need to do to be successful, as well as finding their own strengths and ideally finding pathways in college and career areas that they're going to blossom in and grow and develop in.
Hmm. And as I said to one of the students, to Susie, it must be wonderful for you as principal to have this mini world right in your door, right in the halls of your school, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I see Susie and she's got friends from Peru and friends from Guatemala.
Nice.
and friends from different places in the world that who knows if that's what she thought she was going to find when she first came to the United States, as well as friends from the United States.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Allison, for being with us.
Thank you. What a great opportunity to talk to all of you, and thanks for all the listeners calling in.
Yeah, our pleasure. Allison Hanks Sloan, principal of International High School at Largo in Washington, D.C. It is a school that is designed for immigrant children. She has worked in the Prince George County education system for a number of years, teaching English for speakers of other languages, and she was a Peace Corps volunteer in Ethiopia. Thanks to Kendra Smith and Scotty Myers for producing this interesting hour. And thanks to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We're with you tomorrow. We'll talk about the triumphant Donald Trump, the first hour of our program today, our guest from the National Journal. And the second hour of our program, we'll be speaking with Dee Watkins about his new memoir, The Cook-Up, chronicling his life growing up on tough streets in East Baltimore.